Hello, hello. This is Transistor Radio, where we have a chip chat. I'm Dylan Patel from SemiAnalysis, and this is
Doug O'Loughlin from Fabricated Knowledge. Today, we're here to talk to you about AI in the cloud and then why one of the clouds might not make it. I think that this is, we're going to talk a lot about, well, I mean, they're probably still going to make it, but I think we're going to talk about mostly Dylan's recent piece about AWS and Azure and how AWS is not really focused on the end in mind. And I think Dylan did a really good job on this because truly this is like, I think this is a conclusion that you could get there logically, but I think Dylan really nailed it and like put it all into place. So you want to, without further ado, Dylan, tell me your thesis and then let's talk about, you know, what this means.
Sure, sure. So, you know, GTC happened this week, by the way, on the at least on the time of recording. So, you know, I don't know when we'll post this, but GTC, which is NVIDIA's conference, happened. And on the Monday before, I put out a piece called Amazon's Cloud Crisis, how AWS will lose the future of computing, right? And so this is a very long, you know, post. I think it's my best work yet. And it's about, you know, hey, how did AWS emerge? And like, oh my God, Amazon is so visionary. And Jeff Bezos is so visionary. Like in 2002, he was like, yeah, everything's going to be an API. Teams, you can't talk to each other because, hey, we you know, our software code base is getting so large, it's impossible for us to get any work done because any change requires talking to hundreds of people. And other companies had fixed this in different ways. But Amazon, when they reached it, had a completely different viewpoint, right? And how they tackled this problem. Instead of, you know, adding program managers to communicate and write specification documents, and that was their whole job. Instead, they said, screw this. Nobody can talk to each other at all, right? Instead, because sort of, you know, software had developed to a point, you know, there was a little bit of this in academia, but really, you know, so Bezos wrote a mandate in 2002. Hey, all teams must expose all their data through service interfaces. They have to communicate through these interfaces. No other communication allowed. Direct linking, reading a team's data source, shared memory, no backdoors at all. And it must be a service interface over the network. Doesn't matter what technology you use. Could be HTTP, could be CORBA, could be PubSub. I don't even know these protocols, but like they were big in the 2002 era, I guess. And so Bezos said he doesn't care. Just as long as they're designed from the ground up to be externalizable, right? And not just Amazon's internal needs, which was the issue then, right? But also external. And anyone who does this will be fired. Who doesn't do this will be fired. And so he said this in 2002. AWS eventually launches in 2006. And, you know, there's a whole long story there as well. But basically, Amazon made it much easier for you to start up a compute service, a storage service. Storage is the first thing they launched in most of their products. Beyond EC2, which is their compute service, are database and storage related, right? Relational databases, Redshift, DynamoDB, so on, and S3, so on and so forth, right? Amazon just has the best cloud, most easy to use. And they just continue to win and win and win. And now, obviously, you know, Microsoft Azure and Google Cloud, to a lesser extent, are getting closer and closer and closer. And the gap is narrowing. And even, you know, nowadays, there's clouds from IBM and Oracle and, you know, so on and so forth, where it's not nearly as big of a deficit. But Amazon is better and easier to use as we go forward, right? Then comes the next phase. You know, that's phase one of Amazon, and it still lasts to this day, right? Amazon is still the easiest to use cloud. All the startups still prefer to use Amazon because it's easier to use, but it's diminished to some extent. And that tail will continue on, and the customers who chose them in 2014 will continue to use Amazon as their primary cloud for the most part, right? Then there's the dominant scale of Amazon, right? So, you know, by 17, 15, 16, you know, whatever year you choose, right? Enterprises started saying, hey, actually, cloud's a good idea. Let's move on to cloud. Not just like the Netflixes of the world, but also, you know, the big enterprises like Goldman Sachs, right? And big companies like that. They're like, hey, let's move on to the cloud. And Amazon still won, right? Partially because of their better service, but also because they just had better pricing. And this is because they had scale, right? And scale comes in two ways in the cloud, right? One way is to say, hey, we're bigger. We have a larger footprint. We have more data centers around the world. And you need a certain level of size in order to get a good deal for hardware. And for power and so on and so forth. Right. And then the other side of things, and you know, also, you know, hey, we have to have utilization rates, right? How many servers are rented out at a time? Very high. And you always need to have a certain number of spare servers. Otherwise, you know, a new customer can't just be onboarded. So you have to have a certain amount of spare, but you also want to have high utilization. Otherwise, you're wasting a bunch of money. And so the only way to do that is to get, you know, is to be very large, because then, you know, a 1,000 servers when you have 10 million is nothing, but 1,000 servers free when you have 10,000 servers is a lot, right? Anyways, you know, Amazon was the first to reach that scale, but you know, that arguably happened in the 2012 to 2015 era, where they just kept cutting prices. Ever since then, they haven't really cut in 17, you know, they haven't really cut prices much in that ever since, even though competition has ramped up. And competitors on the other hand, like Google and Microsoft, and even, you know, in specialized applications like Cloudflare for CDN or Oracle for AI, have reached that level of scale, right? But that's not the important angle of scale. The other angle is custom silicon, right? We're semiconductor guys, and you know, in my opinion, Amazon's lead over over Microsoft and Google to many ways is because of their silicon, right? And Google, you know, they did custom silicon, you know, just as early, right? But they did it in the networking stack. They did it in the AI space. Amazon went a completely different angle, right? They came out with this awesome product called Nitro, right? They initially worked with Cavium, who Marvell now owns, but then they started working with on the second generation with Annapurna Labs, which is a company they bought from Israel. They eventually ended up buying, and that drives and creates all their silicon. And so custom silicon, you know, it gives you, you know, higher performance in your unique workloads. It gives you strategic control and lock-in over those certain workloads, and that gives you cost savings, right? And so Amazon kind of did all three at once, and Nitro was the big part of it, right? So for example, when you virtualize a server and you say, hey, I want to rent 2 cores from you, Amazon, for this random workload, it turns out there's some overhead associated with that on the software side. And so Microsoft, to some extent still, right, and Google to some extent still, is using some of the CPU cores on a CPU from, say, an Intel or an AMD to service this, right, to run their software. Amazon in 2012 had an idea, right? Hey, let's place a dongle between every server and the outside world. And all the data flows through it, and it runs all the security, networking, virtualization. And it's called Nitro. And so this runs their software stack, right? And they've shipped over 20 million of these across, you know, 4 generations, and the 5th generation is shipping now, right? So the 20 million was in August of 22. Now they're probably, you know, even higher, 22 million, 23 million, right? The main point is, you know, if Microsoft Azure today still has instances where 4 CPU cores are used up on these workloads, you know, even if you assume it's 2 CPU cores on every server, the average server in the data center is still a 14 nanometer, 24 core CPU from Intel. So this is like 15% of your CPU cores are dedicated to this management overhead. That's a huge amount of revenue, right? That's 15% more revenue per server that Amazon can get versus Microsoft because they have this custom silicon. And there's a lot of other use cases and advantages on the storage side, especially. I won't dive into here, but there's huge advantages on the storage side as well. And then Amazon starts developing their own data center CPUs, Graviton. They're on their 3rd generation. This saves them hundreds of millions of dollars a year or two. All of this is great, right? Amazon is the best. Amazon's amazing. But there's an innovator's dilemma now, right? Doug, you want to top in for a little bit? I've been rambling.
Yeah. But okay. So I actually want to rehash some of this, because I think because you've been talking for a while, I think I could help like refocus you. Yeah. So Amazon essentially pursued this path of being the best CPU or whatever core you want to rent in the cloud to you as a customer, and pursued that with scale, custom silicon, and the best interface for everyone else. But Dylan has been noting that the future of compute is not going to be about it's not going to be about renting an EC2 instance. Like that is like trivial. That is relatively commoditized. Yes, Amazon will always make a better margin than you will on that, but that is not where all the future of computing is going to come from. And Microsoft has done a really good job of kind of, and so like, think about it this way. It's like a platform as a service, right? And Amazon isn't dumb about this. Like, they actually do have managed server, like serverless instances, and like they have essentially compute as a service. But the difference is that I don't think they've done as good of a job as at pursuing the real long-term future, which really matters, and that is AI. And so how they're going to lose, how AWS loses in this innovator's dilemma of the future is that, let's say in 5-10 years from now, they're still competing on the EC2 instances of the world. And in the Amazon way, they've tried to make more custom silicon with Inferentia, and they're using their own AI stacks. But the problem is the AI software just is not even close to, they have a custom hardware, but they don't have the custom software. Meanwhile, NVIDIA is the other big player in this. And Microsoft over here is like, okay, well, we're the strong number two. Let's try to cut off the future of compute. And let's really try to partner with all of the device makers, all the people that matter, and offer the best solution for everyone. And obviously that comes through OpenAI. The super strategic and important OpenAI investment is what really led this. And I think that by doing the OpenAI, then having Azure, then partnering with NVIDIA to do the NVIDIA cloud, Azure is able to cut off the future of this, like, because there's clearly another wave coming, and essentially Azure is going to win that wave, the AI compute in as a service in the cloud wave. Meanwhile, AWS has been doing what they've done best, which is sell compute instances at the lowest cost without actually thinking of it as a solution to the customer. And so the solution-oriented Microsoft cloud probably in the very long run might win out. And so this is something that one of the best pieces is when someone says something that's like really obvious. That's like when you say it, everyone's like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, if you're reading the table, and this is all relatively recent stuff with all the OpenAI stuff, but like if you're reading the table, everyone's like, well, yeah, Azure is positioning itself for the AI future, and then they're going to win that. And then you're like, oh, well, duh. And so I think that's where the beauty of the piece is that it really does line up with a lot of the generations of innovator's dilemma, where AWS didn't lose because they aren't the best. They lost because they didn't go to where the puck was going, versus Azure clearly was like, okay, we're going straight to where the puck is going. So I think that's where, that's how AWS can lose. And to be clear, I mean, I think Dylan talks about this in his piece, like, it's not like AWS is going to be like a bad company. Like, it's not going to grow revenue. No, there's still a lot of cloud migration to go. But the next leg, I mean, and it is about riding S-curves, right? Each S-curve of adoption, the next S-curve of adoption isn't going to be from on-prem to the cloud. It's going to be, how can we add AI as a service? And I think that the Azure vision of the future is much more compelling in this case. Dylan, anything to add?
Yeah, so let's take a little bit of a step back to why Amazon can't do this, right? So Amazon, inventor's dilemma, right? But why can't they just pick up whatever NVIDIA hardware and offer it? Well, one, they don't have a capable AI team anywhere close to the same level as OpenAI, right? Like Google, yeah, absolutely. If you were to say, well, who are the three best AI teams in the world? Two of them are Google. It's just they've both kind of focused on, research rather than shipping product. But there's totally a viability for Google to get back on that horse and start shipping the best AI in the world, even though OpenAI and Microsoft are winning right now. Right. But at Amazon, they're like, yeah, they have some cool video and automation related AI for, their warehouses. But on the large language model on the service side, right, what do they have? And how can they build it? Right. Google has access to every search you've ever done, and they've got access. They've got, I think, the highest market share in email. Maybe, I'm not sure if Outlook is better or higher share, but they've certainly got some of the highest share in email as well. And then they have some of the doc suite, and they've got, a couple other things like that. Microsoft has everything, right? They have Outlook, they have OneDrive, they have the entire Office suite, which is like every business ever. Sorry for people who use Google Docs, but Excel and Word is just, and PowerPoint is just where it's at, in terms of the general normal person working in the world, right? Like that's what they use. And then they have Dynamics, and they have this, they have the CRM platform. They have like analytics stuff. They have GitHub. They have freaking GitHub, right? All the code in the world. They have LinkedIn, where everyone works, right? Like, and everything related to that, right? Like, they have so much more data than Amazon could ever hope to. What does Amazon have? They have like Whole Foods. Like, okay. They got Twitch. Okay. Like that's it. Like, you know, they've got a couple small properties and IPs, but they don't have IP and data of the consumer and the enterprise, right? In that context, right, I think Meta is also, you know, very well positioned as like a third player in this LLM race in a way that maybe, you know, and Amazon is nowhere close, right? Like, I have over 25 companies training LLMs in a spreadsheet, and Amazon is not even in the top 10 of those companies. Like, that's how far behind I think they are. And LLMs are not everything, right? In general, right? It's not just AI. It's about making businesses operate more effectively. And Amazon did that, right? And with EC2, they made it 10 times easier to make a database, a relational database, and 10 times easier to start a service and to deliver web pages and this and that. But now, what if I want to do, you know, how do I make it 10 times easier for me to communicate with my customer or within the company, or, you know, generate, you know, ideas and leads and documents and, you know, what have you, anything and everything. I don't have that data. Who has that data? Some of my customers like Salesforce have some of that data. Sure. But I don't. Right. And you know, who has the most data is it's Google. It's Microsoft number one, Google number two, Meta number three, right? Has the most data. So how are they going to get on this flywheel of being able to create services? And it's not just, you know, AI, but it's also other kinds of services as well, right? And integrating AI into those services, right? And in the same context, right? How can Salesforce, you know, who is making an LLM, they've got LLM teams, or how can they possibly hope to compete with Google, Microsoft's CRM product, right? Even though their product is way better today, when you start talking about integrating AI, well, Microsoft now has Outlook, which Salesforce can never hope to access, and they now have the Office Suite, which Salesforce can never hope to access. Like, so, like, it's a flywheel that, you know, potentially Microsoft is just grabbing share and share and share in every segment, and, you know, because of their prowess in AI, they can grab share in services. And they can also grab share because in their prowess in the enterprise, they can grab share in cloud. And it's a vicious cycle that I don't know how Amazon catches up to. Right. And then, you know, there's that. And then there's some intentional sabotage, which we'll get to first, but I'm gonna let Doug talk a little bit.
Wait, go on about the intentional sabotage. I mean, like, so my vision of what AWS has kind of done is they've run themselves into the lowest cost provider. Like, they really have become the Walmart of online, right? Like, online compute versus, like, in the future, like, the retailers that matter and make margin and are going to grow in this market is maybe like a Costco, I guess. Like, you know, it's just not, it's just they pursued the cheapest at the most scale possible to the logical conclusion, and then they missed the next boat. I feel like that's what it feels like. Yeah, I don't know, man. I really want to hear more about what you think. And also something I want to point out, because let's maybe talk about GTC for a second. AWS was interestingly the only company not on the GTC presentation. And that's because AWS is the most vertical AI stack. And frankly, makes you feel like AWS is doing
Google's AI stack is more vertical, but they're playing ball with NVIDIA.
Yeah, they're playing ball with NVIDIA. Like, they were one of the product announcements, right? So it's like, well, yeah. Google has the most vertical stack, but obviously has like the worst product, maybe. I don't know. That's a spicy take. But like I thought it was just really interesting that you look at the GTC today, and GTC obviously is all about, you know, last year's about the metaverse, this year it's about AI, whatever large parallel compute thing that comes and becomes more important in the next year, that's what it'll be about next year. But clearly the topic du jour this year is LLMs. And what I thought was really interesting is about how everyone was talking about it, and the one company that wasn't even really in the conversation is AWS. And AWS is obviously the 100-pound gorilla, or the 800-pound gorilla in the entire infrastructure as a service and even platform as a service. But it looks like the, you know, AI as a service, which I don't know who's going to coin whatever the effective acronym is. But it looks like they've
probably it's just ass.
It's just ass. Oh my God. You heard it here first. It's just ass, dude.
No, but you have to go ass. Like, okay, you just have to be ridiculous.
Yeah, okay. Dylan, I would love to. Yeah, any other thoughts? Because I mean, like, this is your piece, man. I want you, like, this is really good work.
Yeah,
really specialized insight.
So you know, Amazon is missing, and why are they missing, right? So Amazon, you know, the backbone of their infrastructure efficiency is Nitro, right? And Nitro is basically a networking card, which has all of their security and hypervisor and you know, that kind of software running on it, right? So it's a special networking card. Most people don't realize this, but NVIDIA is about 60% share in high-speed networking cards. Like, they're the leader in this space. So already, you know, Amazon is in-housing, you know, what is one of NVIDIA's gravy trains, right? Beyond AI and GPU, right? Like, a big part of it is they bought this company for this almost exact reason, was for the networking chops, right? Mellanox. And Mellanox is 60%, still is 60% share or so in high-speed NICs, right? And so, you know, Amazon's cut that out, right? Okay, fine. But that's just part of it, right? When you look at Amazon's AI deployments, they're also using their in-house networking, right? Because of course, you know, we're Amazon. We've driven so much efficiency into our stack via the networking, you know, the Nitro card, right? Which is a networking card that runs, you know, software on top of it, right? A DPU in effect, right? The first DPU. You know, we've driven so much efficiency by that. Of course, we're going to continue to extend. And so they have this thing called Elastic Fabric Adapter, and it has some significant advantages, right? I'm not even saying cost, performance, and security. There are some significant advantages, but what you end up doing is you end up losing out on NVIDIA's solution, right? And so NVIDIA, you know, they have their networking, and they have a new level of networking, right? So there's Ethernet and there's InfiniBand, and that's always been a battle, but it's been going on for years. And Mellanox has always been like the champion of InfiniBand, but they've always supported Ethernet too. And NVIDIA has switches for both kinds and NICs that support both, and so on and so forth. But when we look at the next wave, right? This is called NVLink, right? CXL, right? It's these fabrics that are much tighter. Tightly integrated, they're coherent, and they can share memory, and you can do all sorts of things high speed with them. But Amazon has Elastic Fabric, right? They don't have this. They're not part of the CXL consortium, which I think is crazy. And then furthermore, they're not willing to adopt NVIDIA's networking, right? They only want to use their own. And so right now, I mean, what's going on, right? Like, everyone and their mom wants a GPU because I want to run LLMs, dude. Like, this is every enterprise in the world, or every major tech company in the world, right? Meta wants as many as they can get, right? Microsoft wants as many as they can get. Oracle wants as many as they can get. Every VC in the world is literally just writing blank checks for NVIDIA GPUs at this point, right? To rent them, at least. So there's a severe shortage of GPUs, especially the new generation, right? And also because there's a new generation, nobody wants the old one, but the new one is ramping up. Right. So it kind of, it's dumb to buy the old one. The new one is just ramping up. So it's like, it's a double whammy of like everything happened at a generational switch. So now there's a huge shortage of GPUs. I don't think the GPU shortage will be solved for even until like at least a year. It'll take that long. And in the meantime, NVIDIA is the kingmaker now, right? They're the complete monopoly in AI training and inference for large language models. These are being deployed like crazy, right? I mean, if you deploy it across search or across Microsoft 365 or, you know, what have you, this is tens of billions of dollars of GPUs that you need, and you can't build that overnight. So there's so much demand. And, you know, NVIDIA is the kingmaker, right? Like, okay, what's this new feature they've added in H100, right? You know, typical generation, they increase the speed faster, blah, blah, blah. The big change that they added is that they, you know, before, inside of a server, NVIDIA connected the GPUs with a proprietary interconnect called NVLink. And outside the server, they used Ethernet or InfiniBand. Now, right, in Hopper, in H100, this new generation, they're using NVLink inside and outside. And of course, you still have to use Ethernet and InfiniBand, but what they're really trying to push is you use this high-speed coherent network outside the server. And so if Amazon's not willing to adopt their InfiniBand, they're not willing to even adopt their NICs for Ethernet, they're not willing to adopt their NVLink. This is and they aren't. I know for a fact they aren't. They don't want to. This is a huge disadvantage because NVIDIA is the kingmaker, right? And part of the performance, you know, NVIDIA is claiming a performance is as much as 3.5 times better when you use their proprietary network. Of course, it's NVIDIA claims. Even if you say it's twice as good when you use their proprietary network, that's a big deal. And so you start stacking on like, oh crap, NVIDIA's the kingmaker. NVIDIA is very cognizant of the fact that Amazon's already designed out their NICs, right? And they've designed them out before they even acquired Mellanox. And they don't want to implement their networking in the future. What is NVIDIA going to do? Well, hey, Amazon, you wanted 50,000 GPUs. Microsoft, you wanted 70,000. Microsoft, you can have 60,000, and Amazon, you can have 20,000, right? Like that's the allocation that's going on, right? Microsoft's not getting everything they want either, right? Just to be very clear, in fact, they're scrambling in many other ways to get as many GPUs as they can. But Amazon is very much handicapped here because you're the last person I want to ship to, right? Because I can only sell you the GPU. I can't sell you all my fancy networking. Whereas I can say, hey, if you want to buy my GPU to everyone else, you buy my networking, right? This includes Microsoft. This includes Oracle. Oracle has more H100s getting delivered than Amazon does. Like, this is the magnitude of the problem, right? Like, freaking Oracle is going to lead you in AI, right? In terms of AI infrastructure, just by the virtue of having more. And then we're not even talking about if they have a performance advantage, which I do think they will have a performance advantage, especially once they start adopting the NVLink GPUs. And so all of this feeds back, right? Like, hey, CoreWeave, Oracle, Microsoft, Lambda, Equinix, all of these clouds are getting far outsized shipments relative to market share, and Amazon is the clear loser. So Amazon doesn't have the services. They aren't willing to, because they're not getting all the GPUs. Another aspect that's playing into this allocation game is that NVIDIA is launching a cloud, and they've kind of partnered with all the clouds, Microsoft, Oracle, even Google, right? Google is also getting an outsized volume of their new GPUs. CoreWeave, Equinix, Lambda, Cerascale, all these companies are deploying what's called NVIDIA Cloud, and NVIDIA is making a software as a service chip. And Amazon is the only one that's not adopting NVIDIA Cloud. So another reason why NVIDIA is like, screw you, I'm going to ship all these GPUs to the companies that are going to support me and are my partner, and not you, Amazon. So this is they're kind of intentionally backstabbing themselves, or they're kind of handicapping themselves, right? It's like that meme where you stick the stick in your bike and then you fall over and you're like, who did this? If you know what meme I'm talking about.
Yeah, but I know exactly.
It's literally Amazon.
Yeah. Well, part of it too is, I think, Amazon has been used to bullying all the components makers, if that makes sense. And NVIDIA is the only components maker that, like, truly from the GPU, they're going to decide the world. Like, from the GPU becomes the pod gets the networking, and then that the networking gets the SaaS. Like Jensen has essentially just been expanding his little universe, starting obviously with the GPU centric first. And AWS is just kind of missing the point, if that makes sense, because they're not thinking about how this works as a service. And because they're used to bullying, and they're used to making everything their own proprietary thing, but they're going to miss the most important wave. And that's kind of a shame. So kind of a spicy take, but frankly, one that I think is going to come out to be true. The thing that's really interesting about this is making the math work, right? So I'm going to go put my investor brain hat back on. Odds are AWS still probably grows. Let's say low. I mean, I know the bogey right now is high teens or something, mid teens or something like that. It will probably grow double digits, but now we need to seriously think about AWS as a truly mature business growing, let's say, double digits with obviously that's faster than GDP by a meaningful amount, but that is not the AWS you would have expected in, say, like AWS growing 12% a year by the end of the decade. That's not what you were initially expecting when you probably made the investment in Amazon. So I think this is a huge deal and something that people need to focus on. And it's actually really interesting. There's actually some sell side notes coming out that Azure and AWS are going to actually have a revenue crossover in 2030 or something. We don't really know, but I actually think that for the first time, you can confidently say that I think that could happen. I would say before now, that's just baseless speculation. Truly, you'd be like, why the hell do you think that? There's really no data to go on this. For the first time ever, you can actually point to where the difference will be from. And I think that's the wave that AWS missed. And that's why they're going to lose the future of computing, as Dylan put it. So I
have a lot of data in the article. We kind of talked about the sort of reasoning or what do you call it, semantic stuff, but there's a lot of data around this in the post. So I encourage you to check it out if you haven't already. But yeah, it's I think it's a very compelling thesis. And you know, it's not the end of the world, right? Amazon's still gonna grow. They're still gonna be a $1 trillion company, and they're still gonna be a force to reckon with, and they're still gonna have, you know, a lot of things going for them, especially on the traditional side. But you know, it's just hard to see them move forward in service or AI.
They clearly need to like at some point, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see a capitulation and they're going to try to catch up. But then like all of a sudden, the story of the cloud up until now essentially has been like Google was truly like Google, hilariously enough, was like very first, always had its own cloud, never sold it to customers, always internal, right? AWS hardened it, made it as a service. Azure at some point, they wake up and they're like, we need to chase this. And they become Azure catches up, but AWS is always first. Google is like this third place cloud that is like literally borderline uneconomic, chasing revenue. And so that's kind of where we are today. AWS is the king, Azure as like the rising prince, Google as like a freaking, you know, barely monetizable sales organization mess as like a third place. You know, it's truly a kind of an ugly place to be in for the clouds. But in the future, we could actually see a world where Azure's number one, AWS is number two, and like Google might even be could like Google, if it pursues its strategy well enough and AI ends up being that big, you know, maybe AWS is number three by 2035 or something. Like these are like unknowable timelines and scales. But like I think that this is clearly a big meta shift within the giant clouds and something that like investors need to be taking extremely seriously, because it's clear Microsoft made the power play for the future of compute, and Azure is going to be the one that wins in that vertical. So kind of a big deal. You should read the article.
Yeah, I mean, the strategy that Google, I think, could really win in is, you know, Microsoft is saying, screw you, Salesforce, screw you, you know, SAP, screw you, all these SaaS companies, right? I mean, I'm not a SaaS analyst. Doug could talk a lot more about these software companies, but, you know, screw you to all of them, right? We're going to do it all vertically. And this has been part of why AWS has always won, is they've been indexed to the high growth names, right? They've had all of those high growth customers. And then who has Google had? Who has Microsoft had? They've had all the, you know, enterprises that, you know, were just like, oh yeah, I mean, we already have a company-wide license for 100,000, you know, Microsoft Word and Excel and Outlook and blah, 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 blah. Well, why don't we just start running a little bit of cloud with you too? And let's grow that as well, right? So Amazon, I mean, so Microsoft is going to continue that strategy with AI and up the stack and sell more with Copilot GitHub and Copilot, you know, Word and Copilot Excel, so on and so forth, Copilot email. But Google, with their capabilities in AI, could seriously start making a play for like, hey, Salesforce, look, you're trying to make an LLM. It's not going to work. Give up, buddy. But we can help you. Like, we can collaborate. Like, you have the data. I have the data. I have the AI expertise. You have the customers and the ability to productize this. Let's work together. Because Amazon's not going to be able to do this. They just don't have literally the engineers do not exist for them to hire unless they started poaching. But no, you know, if you talk to anyone who's a leader in AI, they want to work for OpenAI. They want to work for Google. And then there's some startups that are really cool. They don't want to. They do not want to work for Amazon. Nobody is excited about that, right? So
they're not even on the list.
You know, it's
right?
Like
there's actually a research corporate. There's like a X Stanford, X universities. There's like a research organization list. Meta's actually pretty high up there. Like much more than you think.
Yeah.
Like Meta's software engineering culture is actually very good. I mean, like these are the guys who manage
Meta.
React.
Meta has the best. Meta's number one in DLRMs, right? So deep learning recommendation models, and their infrastructure for that is crazy cool, right? And it's very unique and specialized. And LLMs, they're just getting on, and they kind of like had an oh shit moment, and they already trained, you know, some pretty good models. You know, they've leaked, so we can tell they're pretty good. But you know, they're just getting on the train, and they're actually like they're going to catch up. Like they're going to be mm-hmm. there, and they have the means to deploy, right?
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, that's the third place, right, that you would go.
Yeah, versus like AWS is not even on this list, which is like really concerning, because you'd be like, come on, guys, wake up. Like, and my favorite part is like Jeff Bezos actually wrote in one of his like annual letters, like it's pretty clear AI is the next wave, like in like 2018 or something like that. And homie, you think it's the next wave, but like it looks like you're going to miss it. So I think it's concerning, to say the least.
They've directionally made the right moves, right? Try and make your own network.
Yep.
Try and make your own trips. And adopt sort of a more open software stack and so on and so forth. But buddy, you forgot that you can't do this as an infrastructure provider. You have to be a service provider, because AI is a winner takes all market, and there's going to be foundational models which are the best, and then you tune them for that specific user. And if you're even 2 years behind or a year behind on AI, that is going to be such a gulf. You know, we're at such an S curve. That's going to be such a gulf in capabilities, right? Like, you know, a year from now, we're going to be like GPT-4 was shit. Right. Like,
yeah,
we're literally going to say that.
I was going to say, for the people who, like, I know Dylan has got me GPT pilled, and I've started to use a lot more GPT. I've been doing like the transcription into GPT. Like, it just helps for all this stuff. But like 4 versus 3.5 is a big deal. Like, it's meaningfully better. Like, I don't.
And 3.5 in November versus 3.5 in February was a big difference too. If people used it enough, you'd know.
And another thing too that I think is important here is language is kind of cumulative, a second grader is using language that you're using, right? But a college professor and a second grader is probably further away from like a zero, you know, like a 1 year old and a second grader, right? But there's like that last little bit of specialization is like where the magic happens, I think. And I think that's one of the things that we're gonna see as these models come out, is like that last 20%. Is not like 20%, like the last 20% from human comprehension to superhuman comprehension is going to be like truly mind-boggling, right? And that's what really matters. And the differences between these little generations and the models are going to be a big deal. So if you're 3 years behind, like, buddy, good luck, right? Like, this is like essentially a new Moore's Law race. Truly, it probably is. I don't know if anyone has coined that yet. Like, I don't know what
Jensen Huang's been trying to coin Jensen's law like for years. Like,
what is it?
He used doubling to say parameters? It every GTC. Yeah, it was like, yeah, doubling the compute required for a model, I think, was his argument. But like, he's been trying to coin it, but no one's stuck onto it, because like, yeah,
they just don't love the leather jacket enough. That's really what it comes down to. Okay, so I think that's all we want to talk about, but I literally cannot stress this enough. And like, you know, Dylan and I, we write publications, we're friends, but like, this is the first time I'm going to tell you, like, you got to read this. This is required reading, because this is a big deal. And I think that the AWS AI hole is going to be something that investors are going to be pretty salty about eventually. So I think this is something that you got to pay attention to, and you need to read it. Semianalysis.com, Amazon's Cloud Crisis, How Will AWS Lose the Future Computing? Required reading. Sorry, I'm going to shill it because I think it's important. So,
thank you so much, Doug. This is why we're friends, right? You tell people to subscribe.
Yeah. No, but
fun fact, I likely wouldn't have turned on a paid newsletter if Doug didn't tell me to. I would have just kept consulting on the side, and so I'm happy he did. But yeah,
I think Dylan's the hero we all needed in semiconductors, truly. So I'm stoked for all this. But anyways, thank you for listening to the podcast. I hope you will tune in next time. This is Transistor Radio with Doug and Dylan. We're here to talk about chips and stuff, but I think next time we're probably going to end up talking about AI. This is going to inevitably be an AI and chip podcast eventually. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.